Our in-depth interviews with the major party candidates to represent Montana in Congress continues. Tonight, Amanda Curtis. That's our top story on Montana Evening Edition. I'm Christopher Allen. We'll also hear the latest on real estate sales in Missoula and elsewhere in Montana and have a commentary. Tonight, we have the third in our series of in-depth interviews with the major party candidates for Montana's U.S. House and Senate seats. Democrat Amanda Curtis and Republican Steve Daines debated for the second and probably final time last night in Sydney. Curtis recently sat down with Montana Public Radio news director Eric Whitney.
Amanda Curtis, welcome to Montana Public Radio. Thank you for coming by.
Thanks very much for having me.
I'm new to Montana. What's important for me to know about this state?
Oh, Montana is the last best place. Have you heard?
I've heard.
We are really a family in this state. We are very proud of our heritage, and we believe in taking care of each other. It's a great place to work and live and play.
You've served one term in the Montana legislature?
That's right. I'm still a seated Montana representative through the end of this year.
Your background is as a math teacher in Butte. How does that apply if you become Montana's new U.S. Senator?
My real experience that has prepared me for being a U.S. Senator has been my life growing up in Billings, experiencing poverty and using education as the key to overcome the adversity that comes with poverty. In my classroom, you really have to think on your feet, and you have to be ready to deal with any situation as it arises. You never know when a student is going to raise their hand or come up to the class and just drop a situation on you that you in no way could have expected. And believe it or not, being a high school teacher, you also have to get 30 teenagers to somehow buy into this idea that algebra is interesting and important to them. And that's not always the easiest relationship to build.
Per capita income in Montana is among the lowest in the nation. What do we need to do to change that?
I always think we should be investing in people. And a couple of ways that we can do that is to raise the minimum wage. My economic philosophy revolves around the fact that if workers have money in their pockets, they don't put it in a savings account for 20 years. They turn right around and buy groceries and gasoline with it. They go out to eat. And when restaurants have more customers, they're hiring more employees and ordering more products. And that's the way that you stimulate the economy. And studies show that that actually stimulates the economy at all levels.
One of the arguments against a minimum wage is that if you tell employers how much they have to pay, then they can't make decisions based on the free market. That if they'd be able to take on a new employee at $8 an hour or $9 an hour, if the minimum wage is $10 an hour, then they can't hire that person. They can't grow their business. Shouldn't employers be allowed to set wages at what people are willing to work for?
Most businesses that I've talked to in my travels across the state, I've traveled almost 8,000 miles now, and the business owners that I've talked to are already paying above minimum wage. So most businesses would not be influenced by this. And there are counter studies to exactly what you're saying that show that actually that's not true and that raising the minimum wage does increase employment and grow the economy.
So if most employers are already paying above the minimum wage, why do we need a minimum wage?
Because not all of them are.
Your opponents try to paint you as anti-capitalist. What do you think of how capitalism works in America?
This campaign has been all about the other side trying to make me into something that I am not. And when they can't talk about the issues, they can't talk about their terrible votes for women and their terrible votes for workers and trying to turn Medicare into a voucher system, then they spend their time and their millions of dollars trying to make me look like something that I'm not. I have advocated for a kinder capitalism, things like a living wage and workplace safety.
Financing a campaign is a huge issue. It's been a huge issue for your campaign because you got a later start. Do you support public funding for elections to even the playing field?
You know, this is a question that I've been thinking a lot about lately, and it has been my job in the last 2 months to raise enough money to try to get my name out across the state. And Montanans all agree that there's way too much money in politics. So when I was first asked the same exact question, I think in the first week, I didn't really know where I stood on the issue. And sitting here today, I can say there absolutely is too much money in our politics, and that perhaps the public funding is a good option to say Montanans can pitch into it if they want or not, and that's what the politicians can use.
Do you think Montanans need to be concerned about climate change, and what do you think the federal government should do about it?
Yes, I think we all need to be concerned about global warming and climate change. This goes back to science, right? We're at a point now where 97% of climate scientists agree that, number one, it's happening, and number two, humans have had a role in causing it. And the government has a role in making sure that for generations we have clean air and clean water.
I think you described yourself earlier as a populist.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my understanding of the folks I would think of as populist are against the Keystone XL pipeline because of climate change concerns and say it shouldn't be built because it will exacerbate climate change. What do you think?
I see less of a connection between Keystone and climate change. In Keystone, I see the potential for hundreds of temporary jobs and a handful of permanent jobs. My dad is retired from the laborers union, and I wouldn't have glasses on my face or fillings in my teeth if I wouldn't have had access to his laborers insurance. He fed, clothed, insured his kids based on just those kinds of temporary jobs. I say that we can support the Keystone if the proper protections are in place for property owners, but I'm always frustrated when we are not fighting for more.
You know, I often hear criticism of the Affordable Care Act from the left that says that it doesn't go far enough, that people on the left support taking strong measures to reduce the number of uninsured Americans. And the Affordable Care Act does that, but they don't like the fact that it does that by requiring people to buy commercial health insurance. And they say that America would be better off if we had a single payer system. Do you think the Affordable Care Act goes far enough, or do you think we'd be better off with single payer?
I do think we would be better off with single payer. But that being said, I know that the ACA is working for tens of thousands of Montanans. 30,000 individuals have access to health care that did not have it before. Over 36,000 people have gotten plans on the exchange. Young adults up to 26 can now stay on their family's insurance. Preventative care is covered. These things are working. Where Montana really dropped the ball was with Medicaid expansion. One of the strongest benefits of the ACA was that it gave the states the option to expand Medicaid. And in the last legislature, I'm sorry to say, the majority voted to send our tax dollars to other states who are choosing to reduce healthcare costs overall by insuring the most vulnerable citizens.
Critics of the Medicaid expansion say it's just too expensive, both at the federal level and the state contribution, that states can't afford it, federal government can't afford it. What do you think?
Well, let the math teacher tell you that the way that basic arithmetic works out is that when you look at the projections of shifting primary health care to a doctor's office from the emergency room, which is where folks without insurance are often getting their first contact point with the healthcare system, when you make that shift, healthcare costs go down. And the employment that it brings to the state through improving the healthcare system and improving access, the numbers are there that shows that it's actually very good economically for our state.
If Montana sends you to the Senate, do you feel like Congress needs to take action to modify the Affordable Care Act to make it work better? And if so, what kind of changes would you make?
Absolutely. I've mentioned already that I've traveled about 8,000 miles, and I am hearing, and I have personally experienced, an increase in cost because of the ACA. And there are problems both with delay of care and with cost. And instead of sending the most extreme representative we've ever had, who has shown over and over again that he votes along party lines and will not cooperate or compromise, we should send me, Amanda Curtis, and I will sit down at the table with anyone either side of the aisle to look at how we can improve this and make it work for all Montana families and businesses.
I imagine you've done countless media interviews since you took on this campaign. What is the media not talking about? What are the questions that aren't coming up in this campaign that you think need to be addressed?
I've been really impressed with the media across the state, actually. Montanans deserve to be fully informed when they go to cast their ballots, their absentee ballots now and their ballots on November 4th. And when you've got a situation where the candidates are hiding and avoiding debates as much as possible, putting off debate and trying to just count on 30-second sound bites, the media really plays an important educational role for Montana voters. I think that this interview is a great example of you doing just that. I would like to talk more about the Citizens United decision. 75% of Montanans know that corporations are not people and that money is not speech, and yet we have an extreme representative who disagrees.
Amanda Curtis, thanks for joining us at Montana Public Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
You can hear our full-length interview with Amanda Curtis at our website, mtpr.org. There you'll also find our interviews with House candidates Ryan Zinke and John Lewis. We'll broadcast and post online our interview with Republican Senate candidate Steve Daines tomorrow. Fewer homes sold in the Missoula area during the first three quarters of this year compared to the same time last year. But a local real estate official says he's not too worried. In fact, Brent Wahlberg says Missoula's housing market continues its steady recovery. Wahlberg is board president of the Missoula Organization of Realtors. He says more than 100 fewer homes sold between January and the end of September compared to the same time last year. But he tells Edward O'Brien it's not fair to directly compare the home sales between the 2 years.
What's interesting is we started off, I think all of us that live and work here in the Valley remember the winter of 2014. It wasn't the most pleasant, especially February. We had a winter that extremely stunted our start to the market, and that led to a very slow spring. What we also had going on in 2013 in the spring, March, April, May, we had the floor of interest rates. There was an incentive for buyers to hurry up and buy because they were starting to see those rates climb. The interesting thing, though, is if you look at June 1st of 2013 moving forward, to June 1st, 2014 moving forward, we are exactly pretty much on pace, I think, within about three or four residential units. So once you get past this point of historically low interest rates that force people in the market real quick, we've been at the same pace as what we were last year. Most likely at the end of the year, I don't think we're going to catch up, but we have our pace has been improving throughout the year.
Median sales prices are up by, what, some $12,000? Is that right?
Roughly, yeah. They're up to $227,000, I believe.
Boy, Brent, affordability in Missoula for, you know, people who live and work here, it ain't cheap to get in the market.
It is a challenge. You look at the Missoula Organization of Realtors housing report, and we see that almost just about 50% of the people that live in Missoula rent their homes. Right now, the amount of affordable new construction, it would really help if it could pick up pace. We see also financing challenges with the need for greater down payments or like the Rural Development Zero Down Payment Program. You need to get outside of city limits, and most new developments are within city limits. So we've been seeing a couple barriers that have made it a little trickier for new buyers to get into. It's one of the unfortunate real estate stories in Missoula. I've been practicing here for 14 years, and it's kind of been that trend all along.
When you talk to your colleagues around other parts of western Montana, what are the trends?
You know, I just last month returned from the state meetings for the Montana Association of Realtors. South of us, Bitter Valley, has seen their sales pace actually stay exactly on pace with what it was last year. So kind of interesting, where Missoula, we were hit by a hard winter and interest rate factors and those things. Bitter Valley didn't bother them. They just kept going, kept picking up. Now, an interesting thing down there, where Missoula, our amount of distressed and foreclosed properties is down to about 4% of our market, it still represents about 18 to 19% of their market. So almost one in five properties still being sold in the Bitterroot are short sale, bank-owned, or pre-foreclosure type properties. So that could explain why maybe there's still more investment activity. When you go north of here, especially up in the Kalispell area, they've slipped just a little bit, but they're so saw a trend a little bit more similar to Missoula's, drop back just a teeny bit from 2013, but their 2014 is still stronger than their 2012, which is stronger than their 2011. So pretty similar to Missoula.
And if you've got some property out in eastern Montana in the oil patch area, well, you're living large right now, I guess.
It's an interesting story out there. You see situations where I was at a meeting, not this most recent one, but one in the spring, and the representative from eastern Montana proudly proclaimed they had three listings in their multiple listing service, and one of them actually took more than a week to sell. So it's very, very interesting times out there. Real estate is an all-time premium.
Well, of course. Been speaking with Brent Wahlberg, president of the Missoula Organization of Realtors. Brent, it's always good talking to you. Thank you so much for your information.
You bet. Happy to help.
And now for the weather forecast for our listening area. West of the Divide tonight, mostly cloudy with a slight chance of rain. Lows in the upper 30s to mid-40s. Thursday, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain showers. Highs in the 50s. Central Montana tonight, partly cloudy, lows 35 to 45. You might see some wind gusts up to 60 miles per hour in some places. Thursday, mostly cloudy, highs 60 to 70 degrees. Southwest winds around 20 miles per hour. And in southwest Montana tonight, overcast with lows 30 to 40 degrees. Thursday, mostly cloudy, highs 55 to 65, with southwest winds 20 to 25 miles per hour. And now for the editorial comments of Al Smith.
Last month, seven former Montana Supreme Court justices had an opinion piece published in the Missoulian. The title of the piece was, Will Montana Judges Be for Sale? The former justices described out-of-state money pouring into state judicial elections. They presented facts that can't be argued with, reports to state officials of campaign spending, from the websites of several of the groups spending the money, and in the words of these groups' spokespeople in news interviews. Money, millions of dollars, were being targeted on state Supreme Court races in states like Arkansas, North Carolina, and Tennessee. One of these groups, the Republican State Leadership Committee, RSLC, announced it had amassed $24 million just in the first half of this year. It spent money this August trying to take out Tennessee's sitting justices. Also active in Tennessee was the Koch Brothers Americans for Prosperity Group. The former justices warned that, just as in other states, money from out-of-state groups will be coming here to influence Montana's judicial elections. This is now a fact in Montana. The Washington, D.C.-based RSLC is currently spending money on judicial TV ads and direct mail in Montana, and based on their TV buys, likely have already exceeded the amount they spent in Tennessee. Americans for Prosperity has also jumped into Montana's race. Financial disclosure forms from the RSLC aren't due until Friday, so we don't yet know who exactly has been providing the money or how much. But thanks to OpenSecrets.org, we do know of the RSLC supporters in 2014. Their out-of-state corporate benefactors include tobacco companies Reynolds and Altria, Koch Industries, Walmart, Citigroup, and ExxonMobil, among others. Montana Growth Network spent money in the 2012 Montana Supreme Court election. It did not report where their money came from and only partially reported their spending. Was that money from Montana, Texas, Washington, D.C., or even China? We don't know because these truly dark money groups thumb their noses at our campaign laws requiring disclosure. At this time, there is at least one other out-of-state group that is also trying to influence our court election. We don't know who they are because they don't identify themselves, a violation of our campaign laws. When you click contact on their website, you get a map identifying their location as Scottsdale, Arizona. One of the points the former justices made was, quote, Montanans have the right to know where the money is coming from, who is spending it, and what that contributor's agenda is. Montanans deserve fair, impartial, independent, and nonpartisan judges and justices elected by Montana voters, not political hacks bought and paid for by out-of-state dark money, end quote. The former justices have been criticized because some received election support from trial lawyers. Now, there is nothing wrong with naming supporters of candidates. That's exactly what the justices said. We should know where the money is coming from, who is spending it, and what is their agenda. The only reason the justices could be criticized is because Montana trial lawyers comply with Montana law and report every penny, how much we receive, who it came from and who spent it, and what they spent it on. Here are the facts about trial lawyer spending in Supreme Court elections that anyone can check out in our filings with Montana's Commissioner of Political Practices. In 1998, we spent nothing. In 2000, we spent $161,000 on two races. One candidate we supported won, one lost. In 2002, we spent $96,000 to support the re-election of one justice. His opponent was an inexperienced attorney trying to turn the nonpartisan race into a partisan race. This attorney was later sent to federal prison for cocaine charges. I guess we were right in our assessment of who the better candidate was. In 2004, we spent $326,000 to help re-elect a justice who had originally been appointed to the court by a Republican governor. As in 2002, his opponent was a relatively inexperienced attorney trying to turn the nonpartisan race into a partisan race. In 2006, 2008, 2010, and 2012, trial lawyers spent nothing, zero, on independent expenditures in Supreme Court races. And what's our agenda? Well, it's pretty simple. For us, the best justice for all Montanans is someone with extensive Montana legal experience with a proven record of being a fair and impartial justice. That's our agenda, an experienced, fair, and impartial court to hear the cases of the Montana families and small businesses that we are proud to represent. What have the judges that we supported done? They have decided cases both for and against our members' clients. But we got what we sought, an experienced, fair, and impartial court to hear those cases. Will Montanans know who is spending money on Montana judicial races? Past experience here and in other states indicates the answer is no, not fully. We will be in the dark when it comes to much of the spending. You will, however, know about every penny raised and spent by the trial lawyers. This election, we support Justice Week. The RSLC supports Van Dyke. This is my last commentary. Thanks for listening all these years. It's truly been a pleasure. This is Al Smith for the Montana Trial Lawyers.
Al Smith is one of many commentators on Montana Evening Edition. Their views don't necessarily represent those of this station. I'm Christopher Allen. Thank you very much for listening.